upbeat news reviews, commentary, not just another podcast,
Out of the Ordinary, the Big Ball Broadcast.
I got nothing. Now here comes your host, Kyle Hebert, and all the world, Steve.
Hello and welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast. This is episode 28. My name is Kyle Hebert. I'm voice of Teen Gohan and PyCon from Dragon Ball Z Shin Budokai, coming to the Sony PSP this week, and the Dragon Ball Z movie Fusion Reborn in select theaters starting March 17th.
This is your co-host, Otherworld Steve. I'm an anime journalist, and I am the webmaster of KyleHebert.com.
This week we've got Mattel turning into Narutards, I Pope, more details on Funimation Films, news on Cartoon Network and Adult Swim releases, Watchmen movie still a go, Sirius Satellite gets serious with record labels, sci-fi gets more dick. Get your mind out of the gutter. Philip K. Dick, thank you.
I'm still laughing about iPope.
We'll explain that later in the show. But let's start by checking the mailbag here at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. This one comes from Alex Kramer in Bethlehem, PA. Hey, Kyle and Steve, love the show. Just wanted to tell you that I find your show very informative in regards to the world of geekiness. One thing I wanted to ask, any chance of getting some other voice actors to make cameos on the show? Maybe a certain guy whose initials are SB. I think you know who I mean. That'd be really awesome. Keep up the great work. Alex is referring to Steve Bloom, one of my mentors and big supporters and fellow voice extraordinaire. You hear him all the time on Cartoon Network. I don't know. Steve is a very private sort of guy. I don't know if he would be hit to do it in the show or not. But I do know that I go to cons and I bring my little iRiver portable MP3 recorder with me, so if I get the okay from other guests to talk, then yeah, you might hear some cameos from other people eventually. And then we'll check our listener line right now at 818-574-3607.
Hey, Kyle and Steve, this is Shiro 004, and I've been a long-time listener for a while. I've been listening since episode 11, and I've since gone back and downloaded 1 through 10 because I love the show so much. Thought I'd comment on some of the sequels and prequels you guys have been talking about. X-Men 3, I'm excited for this movie, I can't say that I'm not, because I'm glad the movie was saved. I thought that the first two were, you know, really good, and I thought they had great writing, great direction. Both movies were just movies I really couldn't complain about, and that didn't let me down. And I know this one won't be as good, but I would have been really disappointed if they stopped at two movies, and I'm glad that they're wrapping this up. And I'm also excited about the Wolverine prequels, too. Indiana Jones 4, thanks for giving me that information. You guys give me a lot of information that, you know, I wouldn't know otherwise, and I'm glad that they're making a fourth installment. Fantastic Four sequel, Steve, you mentioned that once. I don't think that's a really appropriate movie to make a sequel for. And, you know, I don't think fans want to get confused that it's actually the Fantastic 42. Spider-Man 3, I don't know if you guys know this, but on a link in your website, if you go to Superhero Hype, you can see a picture of Spider-Man in a black uniform. And it's not a black and white image, they said, and he's actually going to wear a black costume in Spider-Man 3. I think that's pretty cool, and, you know, a lot of other people do. So what are you guys' thoughts on that? I'd like to know.
Well, it's a weird thing. I was collecting the Spider-Man comic books rabidly at that time when they introduced, like, Secret Wars number 8, when Spider-Man got the black costume, and then, you know, when Web of Spider-Man launched and he got rid of the black costume. Huge Spider-Man fan. But in the back of my mind, I'm saying to myself, self, you kind of got to acknowledge that this is a movie, and the movies don't really follow, like, the comic book history. And in that regard, at first I was really concerned they were going to go the route of Ultimate Spider-Man, which I think is like a really crappy origin of Venom. And then I thought, well, maybe they're going to go the animated series route with the alien costume. And the reason I say that is because in the second Spider-Man movie, they introduced J. Jonah Jameson's son. Now, the thing with him is he's a NASA astronaut, well, he's an Air Force astronaut, who ends up flying for NASA. And he ends up becoming Man-Wolf, and we won't even bother going into that. But when he comes back, his spaceship has the symbiote attached to it. So I'm thinking they might go that route, where they really went out of their way to introduce him and to talk about the fact that he was going to be going into space and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, long story short, I do believe it's the black costume. Because Sony says so. Sony says, yes, that's a black costume. It's a color photo, and he's wearing black. Will Topher Grace be playing Venom? I think all signs point to yes. Will the movie suck? I don't think so. I think the first two were really kick-ass, and I don't see any exception in this one.
And now, when I initially saw it, I just thought it was like emo Spidey or something. I thought they were just doing a gothic sort of black-and-white thing. Because honestly, that's what it looks like to me. And when I talk to other fans, they're like, oh, yeah, the alien costume wouldn't have that intricate webbing and all that design and all that. And like, I don't know. I didn't really read much of Spider-Man growing up. Some scant issues here and there. I know I do enjoy the movies a lot. I'm really looking forward to the third one. I think Sam Raimi is doing a great job with the franchise. So if it is the alien costume, rockin', you know, I don't know anything about Venom other than he's big and scary looking.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just being retarded. But I could have sworn they said Sam Raimi directed Xena Warrior Princess.
Well, I mean, that TV show, his production company did produce that. And I don't know if he actually directed any episodes, but he was definitely behind, you know, the executive producer credits on that. And then nowadays, besides Spider-Man, he's got his hands in different horror movies in development that are doing American adaptations of Japanese horror movies, you know, like The Grudge, that came from his production company, and Dark Water, I guess, and there's probably some other ones in development now. So he's got his fingers in a lot of pots right now. Oh, yeah, and he also wants to rejuvenate the Evil Dead series, start totally over, and not have Ash as a character. So no Bruce Campbell.
I thought you meant the kid on Pokemon.
No, no, no.
Pikachu, get those zombies.
That might make a fun game, at least.
But Nintendo's got this thing where if it's not marketed at 7 or 12-year-olds, it's destined to fail. I'm just so sick of the Westerners, i.e. us, being on this Asian trend where, you know, it came from Japan, it's uber trendy, we've got to license it and remake it over here and mass market it to the Western audience. What, did we run out of ideas? Come on, it's freaking America. I thought we had, like, brilliant people doing brilliant works. Apparently not. Apparently we just have to rely on ripping everybody else off.
Hollywood is very devoid of original ideas at the moment. We're seeing so much crap. Ultraviolet? I mean, come on.
Well, you know what? I'll justify Ultraviolet the same way you justified Underworld 2. Hot chick, tight costume. Come on.
Okay, but do we have to keep coming out with hot chick and guns movies? I mean, Aeon Flux? Now they're just taking it to extremes. And Mila Jovovich, she already did Resident Evil. Do we need to see her again? Well, I mean, yeah, she's hot, but...
To stay out of trouble, I'll say this. It's all about empowering women. I support that.
Oh, yeah, I'm all for that.
The Big Ball Broadcast, we're all about empowering the women.
We're pro-chick. I mean, they probably wouldn't like that. We're pro-female?
Makes me wonder, you know, people say, hypothetical, if you were stranded on a desert island and you can only bring three movies with you, what would you bring? Well, my question, I guess we can have people email in or call in on this one. If you were stuck on a deserted island and you only had a choice of three DVDs, those being Geely, Catwoman, or Blood Rain, which of those three would you pick?
TheBigBallBroadcast@gmail.com, or send us your MP3 comments at that address as well. Or you can call our listener line at 818-574-3607. Mattel turns into a bunch of Narutards. Mattel announced late last year that they nabbed the license to produce a toy line for the hit anime Naruto, or Naruto. Now, they're now fresh from the recent toy fair in New York, and they've come clean with the full scoop. So we're going to see this July an 8-inch figure assortment that will retail for $14.99, a training deluxe figure assortment for $9.99, battling basic figure assortment, which are 4 3/4-inch for $6.99, and then two 12-inch Shinobi Warrior figures, Naruto and Sasuke, with battle sounds for $19.99. And if you want headbands, there's going to be headbands, too, for the various villages, $7.99. If you want to check some pictures out of the various action figures, you can go to figures.com. I'll have the link in the show notes.
Holy crap, show notes?
Yeah, I'm making a concerted effort. When I find things that have some relevant information or things that people can read or see or hear more things than they do on the show, then yeah, I'm going to start keeping the links from my sources and start putting them in the show notes.
Wow. Talk about progress.
A New Year's resolution in March.
Apparently, Adult Swim programming director Kim Manning has been getting a lot of questions regarding the future of Cartoon Network and Adult Swim, and she answered these on the Adult Swim website. I'll put the URL in the show notes, kids. we'll go through some of the bullet points here and discuss. Adult Swim intends to keep anime in its programming mix and is looking to acquire new anime material from ADV, Funimation, and others. And Manning says that Adult Swim has a, quote, great relationship with Funimation and a, quote, strong relationship with ADV. She says Adult Swim is currently negotiating with ADV for an unspecified anime series.
I haven't been following too many anime releases lately. I know that ADV does license a lot of shows, but again, I'm kind of out of the loop. You know, I've watched some stuff here and there that's on Toonami and Cartoon Network and all that. You know, a little bit of Ghost in the Shell here, Full Metal there, Naruto. But I'm not really keeping up with the shows that are going straight to DVD at the moment, so I can't really speculate what show they're thinking about.
And you took the words right out of my mouth. Same thing. I guess it's one of those things we'll have to wait and see. This one was kind of shocking, I guess. Plans for Adult Swim to experiment with subtitled anime have been totally abandoned.
Man.
Which I guess it's good news for you, Kyle.
Well, I'm not going to say it's good news per se. You know, I have no ill will towards people who prefer subtitles. I don't. My beef is with people who have that snobby sort of otaku stereotype that all dubs suck just because they're in English and all that. I hate the mentality. If you want to watch anime whatever way you want to, you have a right to, and you have you shouldn't be criticized for whatever way you prefer to watch it. So I think there should be an outlet, actually, for subs on maybe a cable channel. I think I envision the anime network having two sides to it, like an all-dub channel and an all-sub channel. That way you could please everybody. But I guess no one has really looked into that, or maybe it's not doable from a legal standpoint. Maybe it's too expensive to license both audio tracks. Who knows?
Yeah, Adult Swim doesn't go into any detail as to why, just the confirmation that they have abandoned that. This is pretty good news, I guess. She also confirmed that Adult Swim is going to be expanding their weeknight hours. On March 27th, Adult Swim will be starting at 10:30 p.m. instead of 11 p.m. And in June, Adult Swim will be starting at 10 p.m. By June, you'll be getting an extra hour of Adult Swim.
And shows yet to be announced, right? They're not announcing what they have exactly?
Right now, they're not. One would probably safely assume that Futurama and Family Guy will continue to lead off the Adult Swim block, but that means they have an extra hour to add new shows.
Well, I'm all for more Robot Chicken.
Manning said that between now and this fall, six current comedy shows will start airing new episodes. We do have to keep it, meaning anime, late night for now. And the way I interpret that, and I, you know, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, is that Adult Swim is actually backing the fact that anime, for the most part, is a little more mature in nature, and that they want to keep it as edit-free as possible.
That may be because, you know, remember a year or two ago, Yu Yu Hakusho was getting big, big ratings on Adult Swim, but from a teenage demographic. I'm sure they were very happy to get good ratings across the board, period, but it does seem a little counterproductive to advertise yourself as an adult block of programming, and yet, who is your biggest audience? Kids.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of an oxymoron. I think they understand that the majority of the people watching Adult Swim are teenagers. What can you do? What was really ironic is that they never finished Yu Yu Hakusho, either during like the primetime hours or during Adult Swim. So to finish showing Yu Yu Hakusho, it is currently airing at 5:30 a.m. on Saturdays.
I'm sure it's getting a big audience, too.
Oh, I'm sure 600,000, 700,000 viewers. Oh, yeah.
They're setting their alarm clocks to this.
All right. Let me have a little ego spurt here. In the last two episodes of Yu Yu Hakusho, there are cameos by myself, Super Tim, who used to post on KyleAber.com, and Back in the Red. And now, if you're curious and you want to see those episodes and hear our little cameos, you have to be up at 5:30 on Saturday to catch that. Adult Swim won't run any of the Miyazaki or Ghibli movies from January's Turner Classic Movie airings that were deemed unsuitable for Toonami. And what that comes down to is that Toonami will be only running four of the nine Miyazaki Ghibli titles that were shown on Turner Classic Movies.
So let's see, that would be what? Spirited Away, Castle in the Sky,
Princess Mononoke.
Uh-huh.
And I believe Nausicaä, Valley of the Wind.
While we're discussing Miyazaki, I guess we can throw out that the new dub of My Neighbor Totoro is coming out this very week. Also, Howl's Moving Castle.
For those of you who are wondering if your opinions really matter, Adult Swim does look at the show suggestions from its message boards, and they do consider it for future accusations. But they emphasize that board suggestions are not the only type of input that they take for shows. There are many other means of input that they take, and they also keep tabs on what's hot in Japan and in fan subbing circles, although Adult Swim doesn't actually license the shows themselves. Manning went on to say that Adult Swim does not want to get into the whole merchandising or dubbing thing, so they must wait for an interesting title to get licensed by a U.S. distributor. And, contrary to popular belief, Manning says Adult Swim does get outbid on shows from time to time. And one example would be actually Spike TV's acquisition of Afro Samurai. And she also went on to say that she's super jealous of Spike TV acquiring that show.
Yeah, Afro Samurai being a miniseries adapted from a graphic novel. It's got Samuel Jackson producing and doing the lead voice. That'll be interesting. And I guess Funimation has the rights to the DVDs when they come out.
This one I kind of had to chuckle at for all the Big O fans out there. She said that a third season of B.O. Okay. A third season of Big O is highly unlikely due to middling ratings and DVD sales, even though the writer actually has an idea for a storyline for season 3. But Adult Swim's going, nah, because, you know, as the story goes, Adult Swim actually funded the second series of Big O, but, you know, kind of like the whole Firefly Serenity thing, after looking at the numbers that came in, they're not willing to fund any future Big O outings.
So it's all just B.O. after all.
One thing I'm pretty jazzed about, and you probably wouldn't expect this to come from me, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends 60-minute movie will be airing late this fall. It's titled Good Wilt Hunting, and for the first time ever, you'll get to see some of the creators of some of the imaginary friends that haven't been revealed. For example, you get to see the girl who created Eduardo and the scientist who studied Coco. Foster's jazzed. And in the other Foster's news, kind of disappointing for me, they are releasing a DVD, and that's kind of like good news, but the bad news is it's a best of. It's not going to be in any type of like real sequential order, and it's not going to be full seasons. Not that they've announced as of yet, but a best of Foster's DVD will be coming out sometime this year.
It's better than nothing. At least Warner Brothers is doing that with their shows. You know, they put out sort of best ofs, and then eventually came around and said, okay, to test the waters. And I guess they sold well enough and said, okay, well, now we'll do the season set. So I guess never say never. You probably see a Foster's set eventually.
I love Foster's. I will scream that from the mountaintops. I think it is the greatest Cartoon Network property that's currently airing on the network. I think it's absolutely freaking hilarious. It's not too juvenile. And if you haven't checked it out yet, by all means, check out Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. Awesome, awesome series. Here's a note that might be interesting to you, Kyle. Teen Titans Tokyo!
What?
America's coolest superheroes head to Japan in their first animated series. That'll be airing late fall. And the synopsis is, when a high-tech ninja attacks Titan Tower, Robin, Starfire, Cyborg, Raven, and Beast Boy spring into action. Robin finds out that the ninja was sent by a mysterious and menacing Japanese criminal known as whatever that is. And the Teen Titans travel to Tokyo to track the villain down.
I think you should use that voice from now on, Steve. That's good. I like that.
It is their first animated movie. A little ironic spin in there where Cartoon Network wouldn't pick up the next season of Teen Titans, but they have the movie.
I've actually heard actor Will Wheaton, who plays Aqualad, on his own podcast talk about the change in management at Warner Brothers and how idiotic they were to axe a show with huge ratings. The action figures are selling like crazy, and they pulled the plug. They made all the shows repitch to basically continue, and Teen Titans was unfortunate one that was just slashed.
Yeah, horrible, horrible business idea on Warner Brothers' part.
Yeah, so maybe that one-shot movie is an answer to that. I hope that it'll get great ratings and maybe it'll bring the show back.
We had reported a while ago about the petition to reinstate Teen Titans to Cartoon Network. I haven't heard anything about the results, but if I can dig up the link to it, I'll put that in the show notes.
Ha!
And you guys can check that out. You know, if you really want to see Teen Titans back in Cartoon Network, it's worth a shot. It's worth going and signing the petition. I mean, it's only going to take you, you know, all of 15 seconds of your time. And if you can bring back a great show, then it's very well worth it. Ultimate Avengers! It's kind of been the talk of the town as of late. DVD hit last week. I guess a lot of people are saying it's just freaking amazing. And if you haven't had a chance to check it out yet on DVD, the animated feature is set to air on Cartoon Network this spring.
That was fast.
That was very fast. But you want to talk about fast? Here's fast. Ultimate Avengers 2! Holy crap! Captain America and the rest of the Ultimate Avengers return to battle with a new set of villains. This time, the events are more threatening than ever! Ultimate Avengers 2 is slated to air in the fall.
This sounds like they made that decision long before Ultimate Avengers 1 even came out.
It made me think that they did them like as a co-production. Get them both done really quick.
Right.
Probably have the voice talent go in and record it all at once. And then milk that, baby.
I'm going to have to ask around. I don't know any of the voice cast on that, but I know people who know people who know people, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe we can get some insider information. And in other Marvel news, Iron Man is coming to Cartoon Network. It's an animated feature.
Wow. Is that still on deck to be a live-action movie?
I haven't the slightest.
Years ago, Tom Cruise was attached to that project, and it has fallen out of his hands, which I guess is a good thing.
But, you know, with Marvel and the relative success they've had with their movie franchise, I wouldn't doubt it. You know, sooner or later, they're going to start going through their roster and probably every character from Iron Man to, you know, who knows, the incredibly ridiculously obscure characters. Iron Man, the animated feature, is scheduled to air this fall. And to prove that I'm not entirely retarded, I actually do have the air dates for the Miyazaki Ghibli movies. Spirited Away will air on March 18th, followed by Princess Mononoke on March 25th. Castle in the Sky will air on April 1st, and Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind will round out the presentation on April 18th. All four films will air at 7:30 p.m. Now I just have to say as a little side note, with them airing at 7:30 p.m., I'm really curious how much of Princess Mononoke is going to be edited out.
Yeah, that's kind of a bloody show, isn't it?
The maggot-possessed giant boar that runs through the woods with the flesh falling off its body. Yeah, I really don't know how much of that they're going to get away with.
Well, at least it's not on Disney Channel.
And as stated earlier, the network said they don't currently have plans to air more Miyazaki films, although they did say it was possible that they might pick up more in the future.
Still to come on the Big Ball Broadcast, Sirius Satellite, the Watchmen movie, and Sci-Fi Gets More Dick. It's not what you think.
In every age, there exist people whose duty is to inform and entertain the public. In our time, these people provide up-to-date news, reviews, and occasional guest spots. These people are known to the internet as podcasters. One such podcaster is...
Start up.
For the best in tokusatsu, anime, Asian pop culture, and a little bit of American geek culture, the place to be is at R5 Central, podcasting at its finest. Maybe. Check us out at r5central.blogspot.com or find us on iTunes. See you there.
Welcome back to the Big Ball Broadcast. Sci-Fi Gets More Dick. We're talking about the author, Philip K. Dick. He's had some great short stories that have been turned to movies over the past few decades. We're talking Blade Runner, Total Recall, Minority Report, and next up comes A Scanner Darkly. This one stars Keanu Reeves, Winona Ryder, Woody Harrelson, and Robert Downey Jr. It's set in Orange County, California, in a future where America has lost the war on drugs. An undercover cop, Keanu, spies on his friends on a paranoid journey where identities and loyalties are impossible to decode. Now, I think the really cool thing about this movie is that it's visual presentation. Okay, it was shot live action, and then animators drew on top of the live action to give it a cel-shaded 3D look. The director is Richard Linklater, who used this technique in one of his earlier films, Waking Life. And the technology has advanced to where it can bring out a lot more detail now, and looks really cool. We're saying the word again, it's in the show notes. Check out the show notes for a link to the trailer. This looks really, really interesting.
Yeah, I, for one, have been, like, totally geeking on the trailer, and I cannot wait for this film to hit theaters. This is something that I will attend a theater to watch, like, first running, because, again, the visuals, it's really, like, unlike anything you've ever seen before. It's nothing like The Incredibles. It's nothing like Final Fantasy, Advent Children. It's just weird. It's different. And being different and being weird is what's attracting me to this property, so.
I'm happy to see a major studio get behind an experimental project like this. And they know they have, you know, the Philip K. Dick novels that have been successful movies in the past. You know, it's pretty much box office gold when someone adapts one of his stories. So, you know, hopefully this will bring people to the theater. If for any reason at all, just pure curiosity about the visual presentation.
The only potential stumbling block I see for this film is probably the typecasting of Keanu Reeves, where it's kind of a Matrix-esque type storyline. Kind of, sort of, maybe not really, but maybe I'm just being overly critical. I kind of question Keanu being cast in this flick.
I question Keanu being cast in anything. He did Johnny Mnemonic before The Matrix, so when The Matrix trailers first appeared, people go, oh God, this is going to be terrible. And come on, everyone will pretty much admit at least the first Matrix is really good.
Yeah, only the last one was really terrible.
Yeah, that last one leaves you shaking your heads. Although I've heard a lot of buzz that people said the Wachowskis made up for that with the ending to the video game of The Path of Neo. But I haven't played it, so I don't know.
Nor have I, because that last film just like really numbed me out to the whole Matrix franchise, which is really unfortunate, because I was a consumer prepared to spend gobs and gobs and gobs of money on Matrix collectibles. After that awful, awful, god-awful last installment, they ain't getting my money. Okay, Kyle, let's get serious. Serious in talks with record labels, and they're still far from an agreement. The main problem is that Sirius has relatively new device out in the market, which is called the S50 radio, and it includes an MP3 player, which allows users to record several hours of programming. The music industry is insisting that because of this quote-unquote interactive service, that they're entitled to higher fees, that satellite radio companies should step up and pay more. Now, the major record labels are looking for, get this, 30% of Sirius's take.
Oh my God.
And if the parties don't come to an agreement by June 30th, they'll enter into arbitration.
I think Sirius is in deep doo-doo because they've already got to pony up $500 million to Howard Stern alone over the next 5 years.
And that in and of itself is really interesting because I guess the agreement is basically $100 million a year for 5 years. Right now, or as of this podcast anyway, they just don't have the listeners to generate that kind of revenue just to pay Howard alone, you know?
Yeah.
So I can't imagine them getting hit with a 30% expense of their overall gross to go to the record labels. That's, like, freaking insane.
Man, the labels, it's just all about greed, and it may be just a knee-jerk reaction to the internet and people just downloading albums and, you know, CD sales going down and whatnot. They're probably just trying to latch on to anything they can at this point, and satellite radio looks to be at least the future of regular radio, of terrestrial radio, because you get uncensored content. You pay for it, and it has a growing audience. It's not totally taken over yet, but, you know, XM is always surpassed Sirius, and I'm assuming that if the record labels are going after Sirius for a 30% cut, they're going to do the same thing to XM.
This article doesn't really mention anything about XM, and I don't know if they have an agreement with the record labels, or if it's primarily because, again, the Sirius device has an MP3 recorder. The whole concept of fair use is really being, you know, dramatically looked at and just picked apart just because of a situation like this, but also because of, like, Apple's iPod, where Apple is saying, if you buy a CD legitimately in stores, it is against the law for you to rip that CD and put that music on your iPod. And it's kind of the same thing with this story here, where you're paying a monthly fee for satellite radio. You're paying your $12.95 a month or whatever. And even though you're paying for the service, it's still illegal for you to record the music you're listening to, even though you're technically buying it. It's getting really confusing. Yeah, and everybody's blaming the internet, but go fig, you know? Now you're talking about you can't even go out and buy something legitimately and copy anything. If you get caught selling an iPod at eBay that has music pre-installed on it, digging a nail to the wall. The RIAA is watching these eBay listings. This is already fact. This isn't a conspiracy theory or speculation. If you get caught selling a preloaded iPod on eBay, they're going to fine you for every single song that's on that iPod.
That's insane. I have a portable XM radio, and it has the ability to record up to 5 hours of XM content. And that I've had it for several years. And I think it's a great device, but, I mean, it doesn't have regular FM, AM receiver. It's just for XM. There's no way to transfer the content. I think even back then they were really skittish about the whole MP3 idea. And, you know, now there's new portable devices for XM and Sirius. And, oh, yeah, it'll be a wild thing to see what happens with this whole argument about royalties and its distribution.
And, you know, Sirius's stock is already performing a lot lower than anybody expected. And with this news now, I'd be interested to see what happens. On the Dow Jones, it's SIRI. So I'd encourage everybody to go ahead and go over to the Dow Jones, check out the ticker, and keep an eye on Sirius, see what happens. Maybe by the next podcast, there won't be a Sirius.
Yeah, you never know. I thought for sure their stock would skyrocket with Howard Stern coming on board, but apparently that has not been the case.
When Howard Stern was with CBS, it was shocking because, you know, it was commercial radio, and, you know, he was the bad boy of radio and got fined by the FCC all the time. Moving over to satellite, he's nothing new. He's just another one of many that they have in their bullpen that are going out, and, you know, it's satellite. It's like cable TV. You can say what you want and not worry about what the FCC is going to do. So all of a sudden, Howard Stern isn't, like, original or unique anymore, and you would have thought that their board of directors would have really thought about that and really process information before offering this, you know, $500 million deal. Seems so elementary to people like you and I, yet the people who are in charge of these things, they can't get their heads out of their asses about this stuff.
I would just hate to be on the Sirius board of directors sitting there going, guys, you know, our subscription base, the ad revenue generated, it's not adding up. How the hell are we going to pay Stern? The Watchmen movie is still possible. Yes, the classic Alan Moore superhero graphic novel has languished in production limbo for many years, with only a few screenplay drafts here and there, and various directors and studios attached to it. David Hayter, who wrote the X-Men movie, once had a draft. It's been axed. It was one time a pet project for director Terry Gilliam, who did Time Bandits and last year's Brothers Grimm. Now another director has expressed interest in helming this movie. James McTeague. If you don't know his name, you probably will in a week or two here. He just finished directing another Alan Moore graphic novel adaptation, V for Vendetta, which hits theaters on March 17th. The trailers all draw attention to the Wachowski brothers from the Matrix trilogy. However, they are involved only in a producing capacity. V for Vendetta has already been drenched in critical praise from advanced screenings, and if it turns into box office gold, it could be the ammo McTeague needs to be the go-to man for Watchmen. Coincidentally, V for Vendetta comes from Warner Brothers, who now retains the rights for Watchmen.
Watchmen, although I guess you would consider it a cult following, was an amazing miniseries that really blew my mind. I mean, I was in high school when that thing came out, and it gets to the point where I was, like, just totally disregarding what the teachers were saying and flipping through the pages of Watchmen and, like, wow, holy crap, I can't believe they're doing this with superheroes. It's something that didn't get enough praise. It's probably Alan Moore's pinnacle accomplishment. Again, it's the Catch-22 thing. Because it was such a huge thing, it has a huge impact on me in my teen years, I'm almost afraid to see a theatrical adaptation of it, just because it might, like, ruin something that I hold so near and dear. But then again, if I do appreciate the Spider-Man movies after being, you know, a spider geek all my life, then I guess it's worth giving it a shot.
I've always been very forgiving in comic book movie adaptations. You know, it's just the way Hollywood works. They always feel compelled to change continuity, water things down, or make it more palatable for the mainstream masses. And there are good and bad examples of it. You know, some of it works. Spider-Man works. X-Men works. Not all of it does.
I just have to stop there. X-Men worked, past tense. I admit I'm a spoiler whore, and I've basically read the synopsis for X-Men 3. I truly believe this is just death for that franchise.
Oh, yeah. I'm already saying that just because Bryan Singer bailed and, you know, has nothing to do with it. That alone right there tells me, it's going to suck.
But yeah, I guess you hit the nail on the head there with the keyword being adaptations. They're adapted from the stories. And, you know, I guess if you want to use, like, X-Men or Spider-Man as an example, these are franchises that have been around since the 60s, and you really can't have, like, you know, 1,000 movies explaining the history of these characters. You kind of have to skip a lot and jump around a bit and, you know, take 10 years of comic book history and condense it into a 2-hour movie. I should be a little more forgiving, but the purist in me is saying I really liked a lot of the way the stories were done in the comic books, and I think, you know, the character development over time is really important. It's just a different creature. It's a different thing, and I guess you have to go into the theater with that mindset saying this isn't the comic book. It's different creative people, different control, different directors, different casting.
It's a compromised vision, and if you're okay with that, then fine. I once heard Kevin Smith say, well, look at the facts here. There are far more people that go to movies than read comic books.
I just read that regarding Marvel last week. Marvel came right out and said only 10% of their revenue was from comic books. That blew my mind. You know, they're known for being comic publishers, but they're only generating 10% of their revenue on comic book sales. The other 90% is from theatrical films and merchandise. And that number blew my mind. So I can understand Hollywood's mindset and even like Marvel and DC's mindset saying, well, we're not really making the money from the books. So we have to, you know, explore these other venues to make some money. And when you're talking about making 90% of your money on toys and movies, yeah, I guess you're like, ah, screw history. You know, we're going to throw this crap out there. Well, I only say that because the thing that popped in my head when I said that was Ghost Rider.
Yeah. I already have knots in the pit of my stomach for Ghost Rider. Yeah. Nicolas Cage.
Marvel claims they never officially released the first trailer, that it wasn't supposed to be distributed, but my thought is that was their distribution trailer, and it got such a horrible response from not only like the fanboy geeks, but like from everybody who saw it, that they went back into production in the movie to recreate a lot of the special effects, because, you know, again, the feedback was like, what? I'm supposed to believe that? I'm supposed to believe that's a flaming skull, dude? Come on. The new trailer, which is on the official Ghost Rider website, looks a lot better, but every time I see Nick Cage, it's like, oh, you're kidding, right?
Yeah, I'm not a Nick Cage fan, and I know that he personally is a big comic books fan, and I guess when you're a big star like that, you can throw your weight around and get cast on something like that. I would rather see an unknown.
I think that the definitive statement regarding comic book movies is that, you know, you have to take the good with the bad, and there's always going to be a lot more bad than good.
Well said.
As many people are probably aware, Funimation has announced a new initiative that will bring top-rated anime features and series premieres to movie screens across the nation. The program will launch on March 17, 2006 in select Landmark theaters. Let's see, moviegoers will be treated to a special showing of Dragon Ball Z features, The Return of Cooler, followed by the main event, the U.S. premiere of Dragon Ball Z Movie Fusion Reborn. Funimation films will be available in Landmark theaters nationwide in the Atlanta, Austin, Chicago, Dallas, Minneapolis, Seattle, San Diego, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. markets. More theater chains will be added each week, and fans can find out where they can watch Funimation films in their area by going to the Funimation Films website, which is funimationfilms.com, and a database is being created for fans, and you can search by your zip code, and it'll let you know the closest theater that will be showing these Funimation films. Funimation will also be bringing like regular series episodes to the theaters, and in April, Funimation Films will give fans a chance to preview the upcoming Basilisk series, and then in May, Funimation Films will be previewing another Gonzo creation known as Trinity Blood.
I did talk with someone who works at Funimation, and I mean, yes, I've voiced stuff for there, but I was never actually an employee. I asked them, I said, point blank, what is the way these films will be screened? Is it actual film prints, or is it a video projector, or what? And this person clarified that it is digitally projected. So this should look pretty nice.
Now, by digitally projected, do you mean only theaters that have digital projector units are going to be showing these films?
I believe so. 35 cities, not just the ones you mentioned in the press release, that's just some of the cities, but 35 cities, 100 theaters total.
I'm wondering if that's a full ticket admission to see these things, or if they have like reduced costs.
Hmm.
Or if you can see them during matinees.
Yeah, that's the big question, but we'll hopefully learn more in the coming days, because March 17th is creeping up fast.
But I guess the good news is it is fans' dreams come true. For many, many, many years, the fans have been clamoring to see some of the stuff on the big screen, and I know you, Kyle, have said on many occasions that your dream was, before the Z franchise came to a close, that at least one of the films would make it theatrically, and here's an opportunity to see two of them back-to-back in one sitting for the price of one ticket, and apparently digital, no less.
That's something, speaking as a voice actor on the dub of Dragon Ball Z, I'm really, really looking forward to seeing it on the big screen in a theater packed full of fans.
And now in your resume, you can also put theatrically distributed.
Yes! Pope gets an iPod. Yes, Pope Benedict XVI is now officially a part of the iPod generation. He received a 2-gig white nano from some employees at Vatican Radio. And the iPod came preloaded with, among other things, the radio station's programming in English, Italian, and German, as well as classical tunes from Mozart, Chopin, and Stravinsky. Way to go, Pope.
You know that the folks at Apple's are just hooting and hollering over this news, because, let's face it, if the Pope has an iPod, then why the hell don't you?
Well, they can certainly reach the Catholic audience if they can just convince him to do some sort of ad campaign around it.
Well, I mean, do you really have to have an ad when the Pope's sporting an iPod? I mean, you can't buy advertising like that.
Just see him out giving a mass in front of thousands of people, and he's got the earbuds in and everything.
That's what I'm waiting for, you know, like the neck strap or something, and maybe even the armband.
He's come a long way from being a member of the Nazi youth.
Kids, send your hate mail to thebigwildbroadcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, I'm not passing judgment here, folks. This is just a fact. If you read up on the current Pope, he actually was a member of the Nazi youth. No longer, though.
But if you do your history, you realize that, you know, it's not necessarily a condemning thing. You know, a lot of people didn't really have much of a choice when it came to living under Hitler's regime, and a lot of people thought they were doing the right thing, like many people think they're doing the right thing under George Bush right now, but we won't get into that. But the dude's got a freaking iPod, you know? Yeah, cool. The Pope's sporting an iPod. What I like about the fact that the Pope has an iPod is it's starting to, like, really shed that dinosaur mentality of a lot of these, I guess, corporations, you can call them. You know, we're talking about how Hollywood is still recycling garbage because the idiots in power don't know any better. It's just nice to see a huge organization, probably the largest and richest organization in the world, and the head of it sporting an iPod. I just think it's it bridges the generation gaps.
Ah, well, thus draws another close to yet another Big Bald broadcast. Keep listening for the various ways to get in touch with the show, and we encourage that you do that. I said do. So until next week, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Another World Steve.
See ya!
Visit our official blog page at bigbaldbroadcast.blogspot.com. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Please email us at thebigbaldbroadcast@gmail.com. You can also leave a voicemail on our listener line at 818-574-3607. Additional announcements by Maria Vu. Remember to stay geeky!
Do you know what this means? It means that this damn thing doesn't work at all!
That was good!